to 12, further aspects of transcendental service. Hearing the revealed scriptures. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, any book which gives enlightenment in the matter of advancing in devotional service is considered to be revealed scripture. Srila Madhvacharya has also defined revealed scriptures as referring to books such as the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Puranas, Upanishads, Vedanta, and any other literature written in pursuance of such revealed scriptures. In the Skanda Purana, there is this statement. A person who is constantly engaged in reading literature enunciating the cultivation of Vaishnava devotional service is always glorious in human society, and certainly Lord Krishna becomes pleased with him. A person who very carefully keeps such literature at home and offers respectful obeisances to it becomes freed from all sinful reactions and ultimately becomes worshipable by the demigods. It is also said to Narad Muni, "My dear Narada, a person who writes Vaishnava literature and keeps such literature at home has Narayana always residing in his house." In Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 13th chapter, verse 15, it is stated, "Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. Any person who has become attached in some way or another to the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam cannot have any taste for reading any other literature." In other words, a person who has relished the transcendental bliss of Srimad Bhagavatam cannot be satisfied with mundane writings. So the first process is hearing. When we hear, then we can speak. From Shravanam comes Kirtanam. One hasn't heard, it is very difficult to speak. Without hearing, that doesn't come. Now, depending upon what we hear, that is what we will speak. So those who are attached to the mundane literature, then they will speak also mundane topics. But those who become attached to the transcendental literature, then they will speak about transcendence. Therefore, this point that a person who is always constantly engaged in reading these literature about devotional service, then they are glorified. You know, they are considered very, very great. They're always glorious in human society because whatever you read, that is basically what you're going to speak about. Right? What is your experience? That is what you're going to deal with. Someone doesn't speak about something outside their experience. Right? When you meet somebody, you tell them about what you just heard or what you just did or what someone else just did. You don't speak on a topic you don't know, you have no experience of. So you speak from your own experience. So this whole process of Krishna consciousness is to create an environment or an experience in which it's always around Krishna. So the most important element is hearing. Because from hearing, then it's going to be the speaking. Right? What you hear is what you're going to speak. So then what you speak, then that is going to affect your mind and your anger. So if we, Rupa Goswami is mentioning, the body, mind, and words must be engaged in the Lord's service. So this mind and words, this comes from based on what you hear. What you hear and what you value. So if one values material activities, material benefits, then one is going to think about these things, one is going to speak about these things, and one will get upset if one does not get these things. But if the mind is always absorbed in hearing transcendental subject matter, and one has a taste for this, as pointed out, if one has a taste for Bhagavatam, one doesn't have a taste for other literatures, then we find that one will speak about Krishna, the mind will be thinking about Krishna, and then the anger is controlled because there's no frustration due to not attaining material facilities. So this is the important aspect here. Any question on this? Next is residing in Mathura. In the Varaha Purana, there is a statement praising the residential quarters of Mathura. Lord Varaha tells the men of earth, any person who becomes attracted to places other than Mathura will certainly be captivated by the illusory energy. In the Brahmananda Purana, it is said that all the results of traveling on all the pilgrimages within the three worlds can be achieved simply by touching the holy land of Mathura. In many shastras, scriptures, it is said that simply by hearing, remembering, glorifying, desiring, seeing or touching the land of Mathura, one can achieve all desires. The Lord, see, idea is that we associate with devotees, we hear about this from the scriptures, then we hear these things, we have an interest then to live with the devotees. Then living with the devotees, we develop from them an interest in serving the Lord. And then from serving the Lord, you know, or worshipping the deity, then we want to live in the Lord's place. Because living in the Lord's place, then one will always be with the Lord and with the devotees. So this is the central point of living in the Dham. So if one wants to live somewhere else, then basically that's saying one wants to live somewhere else where the Lord is not or the devotees are not. That is the point. So wherever the devotees are, wherever the worship of the Lord is, then that place is also the Lord's place. So that is a very nice place to stay. But of all those places where the devotees are, then the Mathura itself, or Navadvipa, which is non-different from Mathura, then these are very special. And so the devotees especially like to stay in these places, in the holy Dham. Then all the Tirthas reside within the Dham, because the Dham is the original place. Where Krishna is, that's the original place. Then that expands into all other holy places. So just by being in Mathura, then all the holy places are contained, and the whole universe that are there contained within the Dham. They're all there. It means every Tirtha, every place that there is within the Dham. And the benefits of going to all those simply by touching. One doesn't even have to go to them in the place. Just by touching the Dham. Because the Dham contains all these. You've touched, you've attained all these places. So that becomes very important. The devotees, therefore, always want to be in the Dham, to be in the association of the devotees and the association of the Lord. Any questions on that? Where is Mathura? Mathura here, I think, is Balanpakur Chankasi's place. Like that, because I think he was kind of in the mood of Kamsa. So Kamsa lives in Mathura. So when they took the pastime of going to Chankasi's place with the big kirtan, the civil disobedience movement, and that was, they went to Mathura and complained to the leaders. Because in Vrindavan, then the kings live in Mathura. But Mathura means the whole mandala, right? Like it's Mathura mandala. So that includes, that is very, very big. You know, that's very, very big. Just like Navadvip mandala is very big. You know, you have Navadvip, which is, then you have the whole mandala. Rendering service to devotees. In the Padma Purana, there is a nice statement praising the service of the Vaishnavas, or devotees. In that scripture, Lord Shiva tells Parvati, "My dear Parvati, there are different methods of worship, and out of all such methods, the worship of the Supreme Person is considered to be the highest. But even higher than the worship of the Lord is the worship of the Lord's devotees. A similar statement is in the third canto, 7th chapter, verse 19 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Let me become a sincere servant of the devotees, because by serving them one can achieve unalloyed devotional service unto the lotus feet of the Lord. The service of devotees diminishes all miserable material conditions and develops within one a deep devotional love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Skanda Purana there is a similar statement. Persons whose bodies are marked with tilak, symbolizing the conch, wheel, club, and lotus, and who keep the leaves of tulsi on their heads, and whose bodies are always decorated with gopi chandana, even seen once, can help the seer be relieved from all sinful activities. Similar statement is found in the first canto, 19th chapter, verse 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no doubt about one's becoming freed from all reactions to sinful activities after visiting a devotee or touching his lotus feet or giving him a sitting place. Even by remembering the activities of such a Vaishnava, one becomes purified along with one's whole family. And what then can be said of rendering direct service to him? In the Adi Purana, there is the following statement by Lord Krishna himself addressed to Arjuna. My dear Partha, one who claims to be my devotee is not so. Only a person who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. No one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. One must approach him through his pure devotees. Therefore, in the system of Vaishnava activities, the first duty is to accept a devotee as spiritual master and then to render service under him. Srila Rupa Goswami affirms that all the quotations given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu from different scriptures are accepted by the great Acharya of the Lord, devotees of the Lord, and devotees. The principle is that the Lord, he is more pleased when we serve his devotees, because his devotees are very dear to him. The devotees, because they are so pleasing to the Lord, if we serve those devotees or serve the servants of those devotees, then one becomes very pleasing to the Lord. This is the essential point. Is the devotee, they have affection for Krishna. If we associate with the devotees, then we develop also that affection, that interest in serving Krishna. One gains the service of the Lord by the association of devotees. Shraddha is there, then sadhusanga. But if we technically look at it, even the placement of that seed of faith is coming from the devotees. So by contacting the devotees, then we get shraddha, we get faith. Then when that faith increases, then we want to take shelter of the devotees. We want to always be with the devotees. So we see that the devotees of the Lord, they are our fortune. By having their association, then we become very fortunate, because then we see their determination and interest to serve the Lord. And then from that, we ourselves then develop this attraction for the Lord. We are able to develop what attraction they have. Otherwise, then we're not developing. On our own, one will develop. But in the association of devotees, then we become enthusiastic and we take up this process very seriously. So without the association of devotees, one's life will not be so wonderful. Now in this, we also must understand that these are not exaggerations. This is the Lord speaking, Lord Shiva is speaking, and Rupa Goswami points out in here that these verses in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are accepted by all the acharyas. And he specifically mentioned that at this point. It's been mentioned here, just so that we will not think that this is a exaggeration. Just like we may think that the holy name is an exaggeration, the glories of the holy name. So generally we don't think so much of it like that, but we may think other things are exaggeration, like the glories of the devotees, or the glories of the prasadam, or glories of so many things. So we have to mention glories are mostly because these take seriously, and so we should take them. We should them to heart, and in this way then try to gain that association of the devotees, take advantage of the of being in the holy Dham. You know, always try to read and associate with the and hear from the transcendental literature. So by these activities, then one actually makes great spiritual advancement. So it's not an exaggeration. Because the point is we may see two things are there. We may see some impurities in the devotees. But the example is given like the moon. The moon has spots, but that does not stop it being considered as beautiful. Because the cooling rays of the moon and how it nicely illuminates the evening time then is very much appreciated. So the spots don't get in the way of that. So in the same way, as devotee may have so many, you know, seemingly impurities, but these are something very small. Because Krishna mentions in the Gita that the one who takes up devotional service is not bereft of the benefits of giving in charity, performing austerities, studying all the scriptures, doing these things. And in other places it's mentioned, one who takes up seriously devotional service, it's understood they've done all these things in previous lives. So this is the culmination of a very pious living, developing over, you know, a long time in the material world. So the qualified devotional service is so wonderful that is considered great, because it's eternal, it's in relationship to the Lord. And any bad quality is temporary, it's material. So it cannot compare to the devotional quality. It may seem very prominent, but because it's illusory, it is not that prominent. While the devotional service is the most prominent because it is transcendental. As someone may say, well, someone might have some bad qualities, and because of this bad qualities they may give up the devotional service, therefore it seems to be more powerful. But that's also just a temporary manifestation. Because we see, we identify with this life, and we identify that this is us. And so the time of this life, we will take that as a very long time. So how long we're here, we'll see that is very great. So someone's done devotional service for some years, and then they give up devotional service, or their devotional service is not so steady, or it's not so dynamic. But the point is once one's taken up devotional service, if one is not, does not offend the Vaishnavas, then the devotional service is just a matter of time before that becomes established. Devotional service one takes up, then we see in one lifetime or a few lifetimes, very quickly, one perfects oneself, goes back to Godhead. Right? And then you compare that to material life, which we have been engaged in for unlimited lifetimes. Unlimited. We can't even count them. So unlimited material lifetimes and endeavoring for perfection, and then one or a few lifetimes in devotional service. So now, looking at it in this way, which is more powerful? So then naturally we have to see most powerful service is devotional service. So the qualities of devotional service, that is what we should take. That is what we should see. That's what we should associate with. Because you create association according to what you perceive and what you speak about, what activities you perform. Means depending upon what is your conversation, what is your activities with somebody, then that is the association. So if one is speaking mundane topics or performing mundane activities, then that is the association one has. If one is performing transcendental, one has transcendental association. So if one sees good association in others, or sees the good qualities, that is what one will associate with. Right? One will be associating with those good qualities of others. Then one will gain those good qualities. And if one is thinking of others' bad qualities, then one will gain those bad qualities. Like that. So you become, you take on the qualities of what you, who you associate with. So if thinking of others, you're seeing their bad qualities, that is your association. And you will gain those bad qualities. And if we see the good qualities, then by that association, we will get the good qualities. So like that, the devotee is very careful to see that they associate properly and respect and value the association of devotees. Finding the faults is quite easy. Finding the good points is more difficult. And even if one has, it is one's duty to find faults, then along with finding the fault, you have to be able to correct the fault. Right? If you find a fault, what's the use of finding it if you can't correct it? Right? Just like, let's say you have a machine. Machine is not working. So you check the whole machine very nicely and finally you figure out what's wrong. But then if you can do nothing to fix it, what was the use of endeavoring to find out what was wrong? Right? If you can't fix it, or you can't get someone else to fix it, then why endeavor? So to find a fault, that is not the great thing. To be able to either correct it, the fault, or to be able, despite the fault, see what's good, that is more difficult. So that is what is recommended. That practice is recommended as a devotional practice. But the practice of finding fault is not recommended as a devotional practice. It doesn't give very much or very great benefit. Right. Any questions on this? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just a point that the devotee always try to render personal service to advance the devotee. And then we see that sometimes when the devotees come to some positions, they have some expertise in certain field of devotional activities, then they seem to have that service attitude or personal service attitude.
Question is that, could you hear? Question is that someone may be rendering service to devotees, and then as one advances due to this, then one may have a tendency to give up that service because one is doing other activities. And then sometimes we see they have difficulty in their devotional service, so would this be a cause from there? Would that be because they've given up that service? See, the service, then you have... service, then you have the aspects of the Vapu and the Vani. So whenever is possible, one may try to take advantage of service to Vapu or to the form. But then Vani Seva is more important, is taking advantage of the instruction by following and serving the instruction. So that is also service. So depending upon what one's service is, one may not have so much time for personally serving the devotees. But if one has the opportunity, then one is happy to do that. But if one doesn't have so much the opportunity, then one may be more serving the instruction. Or one's service is to others is to help them understand the instructions or how to serve, you know, by preaching and by instructing or guiding. But then if an opportunity to render service is there, but they don't want to take that, that may be a problem. They feel that they're too elevated for that. So basically the difficulty comes is that they're thinking that they're very advanced. And as we see from the example of Maharaj Chitraketu in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, is that Chitraketu was thinking that he is very advanced. he was very advanced. So the problem is not that he's very advanced. The problem is he was thinking he's very advanced. So from thinking he's very advanced, then that itself then created an obstacle in his devotional service. Right? So then the obstacle is caused by the pride. Right? Because he's serving. But the pride was there, so he was thinking, I am very advanced. So that was a disturbance. So if the opportunity is there for Vapu Seva, one will do that. But if not, Vani Seva is always there. And then one should not become proud in either case. Even if one is doing personal service to the Vaishnavas, if one is very proud, I am doing, others are not doing, or see how well I do, or I am the best servant, all these things, then one, that will also be a difficulty in one's devotional service. One will also find problems. Does that make some sense? Yes, the service attitude. Question is, the service attitude then appears to be what counts. That's the point. Serving the Vaishnavas or serving the instructions or following their means, you're either them personally. So the service like that. Service attitude. Because if service attitude's not there, then the desire to learn is not there. And if the desire to learn is not there, we don't question. Means we want to learn, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear from the devotees, right? Then we will hear, we will ask questions. So unless the desire to learn is there, it won't be there. So that comes from service. Spiritual desire, spiritual inquiry comes from service. Material desire for material knowledge and inquiry comes because we have material motives that we want. We have some material desire. Right? We want to serve ourselves with these desires. So the spiritual desire comes, a spiritual desire for spiritual knowledge comes from service. So if service is not there, knowledge is not actually desired or gained. Right? Anything else on this? Yes. You understand? So, to understand the advancement means we have to be educated somewhat. We have to know what are good qualities, what is the devotional process. So then we look and see if, one, the principal point is this, if there's a taste for chanting, a taste for glorifying the Lord, then if we see that going on, then we know that then advancement is there. But we can also see just other aspects of, you know, service is being done nicely and this and that. It means if there's dedication, then service is going on. That they've committed themselves and they are dedicating themselves, then all these things will, means time will be there, place, position may be there, all these different things may be there. So it's not simply because they're in a position. Because they're in a position, or because they've been around a long time, they automatically deserve our respect. It doesn't mean that when it's said that they're not advanced, it doesn't mean that they're not respectable. See, there's different aspects of the culture depending upon what's there, and all that together then makes for the society, culture and society, cultural Vaishnava, is that position is always respected. Whether someone's advanced or not, you know, then time, age, is always respected, though they may be advanced or not. You know? Then knowledge is respected. Wealth is respected. You know, renunciation, any of the qualities of Krishna, we see all wealth, all knowledge, all power, all renunciation, all beauty, all fame. These all must be respected. If they're not respected, then that's uncultured. Then, besides that, is we take close association from those who are advanced. Right? So when we deal in the social sphere, we must respect according to the culture. Then, besides that, we are also seeing advancement. Right? But because that someone in a position of authority may not be that advanced doesn't mean we don't respect the position. We may not have so much respect for the individual in that we will not take very close association. But that doesn't mean the position itself is not respected. This is a very common factor that's overlooked. It's like if the person isn't advanced, I don't respect. You know, or if the person's not in a big position or been around for a long time, I don't respect, even though they may be advanced. But one has to combine the two. Because in the social aspect, then all these things of knowledge, of influence, position, power, wealth, fame, beauty, age, you know, how you say, ability, these must be respected. Otherwise, you're not dealing with human society. You know? Even animal society, there's some respect of this. Right? The bigger animal is respected by the smaller. You know, so it's just a matter of only because the other person can make trouble for you if you don't respect them, then you're respecting. But human life means you accept all these and understand that this is part of the culture. Okay. That's part of the culture. Then, as devotees, right, as humans, we accept that. As devotees, then we also, on top of that, then look always for advancement. And then that advancement, then we associate more closely. Right? If the advancement is there, we'll associate more closely. If the advancement is not there, we won't associate so closely. So we see that by symptoms, that they are chanting nicely, they like to glorify the Lord, they like devotional service, they're attached to devotional service. We see the good qualities of a devotee manifest in them. So the main is surrender to seeing themselves as a servant of the Lord. That's the main lakshana that will always be there. And then the activities of other activities, you know, other qualities may or may not be manifest according to time, place, and circumstance, or according to the individual nature of the devotee. You know, like Bhima, he may not always see the quality of humility, right? But he's a pure devotee. He has it. Before the Lord, he is humble. Before his older brother, you know, in general circumstances, he is humble. But to Duryodhana and others, he's not humble in the least. You know, he's just waiting for his brother to say okay, and he'll take his club and smash Duryodhana into powder. You know? Like that, because he's such a nonsense. He's such a non-devotee. And he's disturbing the devotees. So as a devotee, and as a kshatriya, it's his duty to establish dharma. So one of the best things he could do for dharma is to remove Duryodhana from the scene. But he doesn't, because he's humble. He follows the direction of his brother and the direction of the Lord. So Krishna wants to kill more than Duryodhana. He wants to kill 640 million you know, persons who are creating problem rather than one. So Therefore, that's why it's said as you see that. Other qualities are also there, but you may or may not see those. The tendency is, well, if I don't see, you know, humility in the way I think it should be, the person's not advanced. You know? Or I don't see detachment the way I think it should be. Like, I may have my own sentimental idea of what is an advanced person. Like Gadadhar Pandit, he was taken by, I think, Damodar Pandit? He went to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So then he had heard the glories of Pundarik Vidyanidhi and everything. So he was really had an idea of this sadhu. And then when he walked into his court, and he's in big, you know, asan and canopies and, you know, decorated, and he's smoking a hookah, and he has so many nice turbans and fancy clothes and all this, and the whole thing is just arranged, it's just like a very kingly opulence. Then immediately Gadadhar Pandit thought, you know, I thought I was going to see a sadhu, but instead I'm seeing a, you know, an enjoyer, a swadhu, you know, like this. So he was not impressed. So then Damodar Pandit then quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. And hearing that verse, then Pundarik Vidyanidhi fell on the ground in ecstasy and was rolling around for 6 hours and flailing his arms and kicking his legs and just breaking things and destroying all these valuable things. So you can understand it wasn't just, you know, some so-called ecstasy. Otherwise, so-called ecstasy, you'd be very careful not to break any of your valuable possessions. Breaking this, that, couldn't care less. You know, it was just completely absorbed in ecstasy of... Then Gadadhar Pandit understood that this was an advanced devotee. You know, because he liked to hear. Though externally it looked like he was had so much opulence in that. Because generally we tend to think someone's advanced, then they have to have nothing. You know? But advancement is how they are engaging everything in Krishna's service. That's the advancement. So one looks for that quality, then one is sure of advancement. And then if one sees other qualities, then that's also very nice. But one has to know the devotional, something of the devotional process to see. Because the general tendency is one can see advancement according to one's own advancement. Like how advanced one is, one can see that. So persons below, one can see gradation, but above may or may not be able to tell. That's why generally in the, much of the time we find in a neophyte devotee, there's neophytes and then there's uttamadhikaris. That's all there is in their perception. The madhyama is not understood. Means the other one is so far advanced, it's obvious that there is some difference. But the Madhyama, it looks like they're doing just what we're doing. So therefore, they're just the same as us. Right? So they can't really distinguish nicely. There's not a real clear picture. Like that. Does that make any sense? Anything else in this? Yes. Loudly.
Loudly. Even after analyzing the qualities of the devotee, one has to fight in order to make sure that the
best. Yeah. You hear? Yeah. So, to analyze the qualities of the devotee, then one has to have knowledge, but then if the faith is not there. But if the faith is not there, one also won't necessarily come to the right conclusion. Right? If faith is not there, then one's purpose of analyzing may not be proper also. If one has faith in devotees, then one will analyze and one will see who one associates more closely with and who one doesn't associate so closely with. Because if someone's not so advanced, or even if one finds that they don't even seem to manifest, you know, very proper qualities at all, one still deals properly with them. Etiquette's always followed. But they don't associate very intimately, very closely. Like that. Means we always are we always behave nicely with devotees. So even if they just dress as devotees and are not devotees, we'll behave properly because we'll deal with anybody properly. So why not if someone's just dressed as a devotee? Right? Just like Jarasandha, the Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima, they were dressed as brahmanas. So because they were dressed as brahmanas, then he gave them a respect of brahmanas. Like that. He gave the respect of brahmanas. But speaking of brahmanas. So he gave the respect just because they were dressed. In the Manu Samhita it mentions that even if someone just claims to be a brahmana, they should be respected as one. They just claim to be a brahmin. You respect them as a brahmin. It doesn't say that there's great opulent worship and respect. It just means you deal with them as if they're a brahmin. But then you see those who have the brahminical qualities, those ones then you deal with very, very nicely. Those are the ones you invite to programs or give charity to or, you know, all these different activities. Take advice from. And the other person who just claims to be a Brahmin, okay, one offers respect, but one doesn't take their advice or other things from them. One doesn't do. So in the same way, as just even they're dressed as a devotee, etiquette is followed. You know, one is very nice and respectful, and that's it. But one doesn't associate intimately. So therefore, there's basically no reason to ever deal badly with devotees. There's never a reason to do that. It's just a matter of looking for those to associate closely with, right? The advice is associate with advanced devotees. You know, all devotees are special. Advanced devotees are more special. And then you can't get away from, you know, having to basically deal in the material energy. So one is nice with everybody in the material energy, right? One is respectful even to an ant. So let alone other, you know, animals or human beings, and let alone those who are in the devotee community. So one is always respectful. But then from that, it's understood material world's material world. But within the material world, we're looking for something nice, right? Just like the bee is looking for the honey. How much honey is there in one countryside, right? Not that much. There's a lot more of other things. But the bee just looks for the honey. That's all. He's not worried about everything else. So the devotee understands there may be so many, you know, non-devotees and then so many devotees, and one deals very properly with everyone according to their position. And then the devotees he deals with more, you know, closely, but amongst that he's looking for those who are more advanced and then takes advantage of that association. Does that make some sense? Can you close the screens? Just the screens, not the window. Yes. At what stage do we not commit any more Vaishnava aparad? Generally, we see the tendency is, I mean, the general tendency where it's not just commonly happening is from the platform of nishta, it becomes very much less. Because the major aspects of anartha nivriti are accomplished. And Vaishnava aparad is one of the major obstacles. So as long as that's there, one's not going to become steady in devotional service. So at that point, we will see it becomes much more prominent. Right? That becomes much more prominent. Then as we gain a taste for devotional service, strong taste, at ruchi, then we see that that offenses will become, whatever little is, it will become even less or hardly existent because one has a taste for the transcendental activities. So one is not in any more motivated by the gross or subtle sense gratification. So if that's there, then nobody's, that means one generally gets upset with people or offends because of something to do with position or facility or authority. Now some of these aspects we see, right? Because fault finding, kutinati, that's one of the main anarthas, to find fault. So that's given up. So one will see by that time it's very minimal. And sakti, then one's main interest is just one's attachment and attraction to Krishna. In bhava, then the ecstasies of devotional service, one doesn't have time for any of this. Though there is the slight possibility that because one is so advanced, one may consider that they are advanced. And if somebody behaves in a way that is not becoming in the etiquette for the advancement of that devotee, there may be one may then feel some dissatisfaction. But if that other person is an advanced devotee, then this will disturb one's devotional service, as we see with that Ramachandra Khan at the time of Vishwanath, not the time of Lord Chaitanya. He was considered at the time, because Vishwanath was in Bengal, he was like the senior, kind of like the senior most person in Vrindavan at Radhakund. So he used to give the Bhagavatam lectures and discussions, lead the discussions. So then one day, I don't remember her name, but one advanced, very advanced Vaishnavi came into the assembly and she was chanting. And she sat down and she was listening to the class, but she was still chanting. So Ramachandra Khan made a point. He says that when you're listening, it's better not to chant also. You know, you do one service at a time. You listen to the Bhagavatam class or you chant Hare Krishna. So she said, I'm listening. My tongue is chanting. It's just its habit. So, you know, please don't mind my tongue, but I'm listening. So he took it that she was being kind of impudent, that she was chanting and not really listening and just saying that she was so, you know, advanced like this and that. So he got actually annoyed. But what she said was true. So then slowly, the material desires within his heart came up. And then within a short time, he again went back to his, you know, village and just became a gross sense gratifier like, you know, so many others. He fell from his position. He was an Uttamadhikari, just to point that out. Right? So basically then when one comes to the platform of prema, then Vaishnava Aparad is not there. But still we see that because every living entity is different, then they may have differences of opinion in devotional service. Therefore the etiquette is very important to follow. Etiquette must always be followed because there will be differences of opinion. Right? Like you see, like Radharani is serving Krishna. Others are also serving Krishna in the same way. And so naturally there'll be a difference of opinion on which will be the better service. Should Krishna be with Radharani or should Krishna be with other gopis? Right? But we see they don't offend the other. They have respect for the other. They have respect for all of them. We see the Goswamis respected all of the other residents of Vrindavan. But they won't do what they're doing. Right? That's the thing, is you can have respect for somebody, but not do what they're doing. You understand? This is an element of human culture. So you can respect somebody, but not have any interest or desire to do what they're doing or have their, accept their mood or their way they do things or their ideas. You understand? Anything else? Okay. Then the next item, serving the Lord according to one's position. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement that one should perform the ceremonies for the Lord according to one's financial position. Everyone should observe the different ceremonies and celebrations of the Lord by all means. So, whatever one has, then as we saw before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying himself, his home, his family, his possessions, everything is for the Lord's service. So according to one's means, one should serve the Lord. So what was one's abilities, what is one's position, in some way or another one serves the Lord. It should be, Prabhupada points out in this in the sixth chapter, that it's not that one is living very opulently yourself, and then one is giving some very simple worship or offering to the Lord. If one has facility, one worships the Lord very opulently. And then one is also living opulently, you know, taking the remnants of what is offered to the Lord. And if one is very poor or very simple, then he may worship the Lord very simply. That is not the problem. But according to your means, then you should worship the Lord. One should be honest in this way. Whatever one has, that is given to the Lord. One shouldn't keep back. You know, one should properly, the standard should be comparable. Whatever you have, it mentions the best in the previous chapter. Offering a favorite article. So whatever's the best you have, and that's what's offered. So within whatever you have, the best of that you give to the Lord. So if you have very wonderful things, then the most wonderful of those wonderful things you'll offer. And if you have very simple things, the best of those simple things you'll offer. Anything on this? Next point, performing devotional service in Kartik. One of the most important of these ceremonial functions is called Urja Vrata. Urja Vrata is observed in the month of Kartik, October, November, especially in Vrindavan. There is a specific program for temple worship of the Lord in his Damodar form. Damodar refers to Krishna being bound with rope by his mother, Jashoda. It is said that just as Lord Damodar is very dear to his devotees, so the month known as Damodar or Kartik is also very dear to him. The execution of devotional service during Urja Vrata in the month of Kartik is especially recommended to be performed at Mathura. This system is still followed by many devotees. They go to Mathura or Vrindavan and stay there during the month of Kartik, specifically to perform devotional services during this month. In the Padma Purana it is said, the Lord may offer liberation or material happiness to a devotee, but after some devotional service has been executed, particularly in Mathura during the month of Kartik, the devotees want only to obtain pure devotional service unto the Lord. The purport is that the Lord does not award devotional service to ordinary persons who are not serious about it. But even such unserious persons who execute devotional service according to the regulative principles during the month of Kartik and within the jurisdiction of Mathura in India are very easily awarded the Lord's personal service. So then of serving the Lord according to one's position, then this serving the Lord in Kartik is then especially recommended. Because in this month, being very dear to the Lord has been bound by the love or affection of Mother Jashoda. And so this is a very special festival for him. And then so the devotee can bind or catch that Lord, that same Lord, then by performance of devotional service in Kartik. So it's a very special time. It's a very dear month to the Lord. So if during this time one makes special vrata to try to increase one's devotional activities during this month, then the Lord is very pleased. That is the point here. Any questions on this? Yes. Why we were singing Radha Damodar during the month of Kartik. Damodar means he's bound by the waist. Udara means the stomach. So he is bound by the affection of Mother Yashoda. So that we see, we're singing that song, the Damodar Astika, which is glorifying all these various aspects. But we have to remember that this particular pastime is performed here in the Bhumandala, in the Bama Vrindavan. So it is one of the special activities that is performed, like Krishna's child birth and childhood pastimes and killing of the demons. These are only manifest within the Bhoma Vrindavan Leelas. So they become very, very special. So then, because it's performed in Bhoma Vrindavan, then it always takes on this flavor of sequential activities. He's very small, so he's like a baby. Then at one point he turns over and starts crawling. Then they have that festival in which the Shataka Asura is killed, the cart demon. Then he's crawling around and he's spending his time with Mother Yashoda and the gopis. And at one point he stands up and he starts moving around more and starts stealing butter. And then from this, then she binds him with a rope and all these different things. So the activities go like this. And then later, then he comes to the point of spending time with Srimati Radharani. But the point is that Krishna's relationship with Srimati Radharani has always been there. It's always there. So Radharani is always within his heart. Like we see Srimati Radharani, when she appeared, her eyes were closed. Because her first thing she wanted to see was Krishna. So then after some time, then Mother Yashoda and the other gopis from Vrindavan came to Varshana to see Kirtida and to see their wonderful baby child. And then Krishna, he went over while they were sitting in the room and talking. Then Krishna walked over to the place where Radharani was and climbed up on it. And then Radharani, smelling Krishna's fragrance, then she opened her eyes at that time. Right? So this relationship is always going on. I think also I'm not sure if it's not in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, that Radha and Krishna were like around 3 years old and they're just wandering around this and that. And then when the elder gopis are all busy, because at that time then Krishna used to also play with the young age, like this, before he took the calves out, then the small boys, small girls, they'd all play together there. And so at one point, then Radharani just told Krishna, let's head to the forest. So all the three-year-old kids, they all go out to the forest. And then once they're in the forest, they manifest their Kishore forms. And then all the gopis are there and fanning them and this. And then Lord Brahma comes and he performs a wedding ceremony and all these things happen. And then after they do that, then they come back as three-year-olds and come back into the courtyard of the houses. So the point is Krishna in Krishna's heart, then Radharani is always the prominent devotee. So that is always there. So we are worshipping his brother Damodar, because he's bound by the ropes of affection. So the ropes of affection of Srimati Radharani are the greatest. Though it is always celebrated in the pastime with Mother Yashoda. That is the prominent, the glory of that pastime of binding him is given to, that unique position is given to Srimati Radharani. But that position of binding him with affection, then we see, is given to Mother Yashoda. So that is Srimati Radharani. She is binding also with this affection. Like that. Therefore we sing. Because the point is you only see this chronology here. Otherwise, in Goloka, those pastimes, the Kishore pastimes, are always going on. Does that make some sense? Okay. And we're as worshippers of Radha and Krishna. See, as worshippers of Radha and Krishna, we appreciate all the other rasas and relationships that Krishna has with his devotees. It's not that only if it's about Radha and Krishna we'll hear it and other things we won't hear. That's the thing. Everybody is... amazed and impressed with the wonderfulness of Krishna's childhood pastimes, you know, with Mother Jashoda and all that, because they're so wonderful. Rasa is appreciated. Rasa is rasa. It's appreciated. Just like someone who is a good cook or a good taster of foodstuffs, they may have their particular kind of food they prefer. But if they're actually a relisher of good food, any cuisine that is cooked properly, they can appreciate. They can appreciate the fineness of it, how well it's cooked, how well it's, served, presented, the atmosphere that's created, because they know that that's all part of the food. Just the spicing, this and that, is something. If they were cooking, they might use other spicing, or if they're on their own, they would make a different kind of food. But they can appreciate. So those who can actually taste rasa, any rasa, spiritual rasa, they appreciate. So naturally, then in their heart, they appreciate this, right? Isn't it? Just like the mother may appreciate seeing the child playing with his friends, so she's appreciating the friendship rasa going on there. But she still has viewing this as her son, who is playing with his friends. Right? So then the worshippers of Radha and Krishna then see this is Krishna, right? Who is performing his pastimes with his mother or friends and this and that, but they still see Krishna with Radharani. Is that understood? Like that. So we don't have any problem of hearing these other things. You know, even we hear about the glories of the Pandavas, and we don't have any problem. It's not that, oh, we can't listen to those pastimes. Does that make any sense? Anything else on this? Can you speak loudly? No, loudly, loudly.
It's mentioned Mathura in India. And also Mathura is not limited to a place. Wherever Krishna's worship is also Mathura.
Yes. Means mentioning that Mathura, his Prabhupada says Mathura in India. And so then we understand for Krishna's worship that is Mathura. But any place where Krishna's worship, that is Mathura. But then Mathura itself, amongst all those places where Krishna's worship, that is non-different from Mathura, that Mathura is special. Right? Because in another place, like it said, Advaitacharya tells Lord Chaitanya, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. Because Lord Chaitanya was looking for Vrindavan, and they sent him off, you know, towards Advaitacharya's house. And they said the Ganga was Yamuna and all this, and then he's very happy and he's going across the Yamuna, and then suddenly sees Advaitacharya and he says, well, what are you doing? How did you get here to Vrindavan? You know, then he finds out that this is still in Navadvipa, you know, like that. So he's been, and Advaitacharya says, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan, because his consciousness is in Vrindavan, so that's there. So the point is, the deity is there, the deity is in Mathura. If our consciousness is Krishna conscious, we are also in Mathura. But if our consciousness is not conscious, the deity is in Mathura, we're not in Mathura. But if we're in Mathura, whether we're conscious or not, we are in Mathura. So that's the special thing. It's just like you're in the temple in the west, that is the Dham. As soon as you step 1 centimeter out the front door, you're in the material world. But here, you can step out of the temple, walk up the road, go down the street. You're always in the Dham. You understand? So that influence is very special. Therefore, he mentions that so that we won't, because otherwise, then a concept comes up. Since it's non-different, then there's no use in going anyway. It's not necessary. It's not important. But Prabhupada always had asked the devotees, they come. And they recharge their spiritual batteries by coming to Mayapur and Vrindavan. That's why he made so much endeavor to make the places and make the facilities. Otherwise, then that comment will come up, and it's no different, so why we have to go? But it's like, means if, you know, one's busy, that's another thing, but one should never not want to visit the Dhamma. Right? Is that okay? Is that okay? Was that okay? Or? Observing festival, celebrating the Lord's activities. In the Bhavishya Purana, there's a statement about observing different ceremonies, celebrating the Lord's appearance, birthday, and other transcendental activities. It is said, "My Lord Janardana, Krishna, please let us know the date when your mother Devaki gave birth to you. If you kindly inform us about this, then we shall observe a great celebration on this date. O killer of Keshi, we are souls 100% surrendered unto your lotus feet, and we wish only to please you with our ceremonies." This statement of the Bhavishya Purana gives evidence that by observing different functions in relationship with the Lord, one is sure to become pleasing to the Lord. So these are other ways of establishing, means whatever we do, we want to do with the, in relationship with the Lord, connection to the Lord. And people, the living entity likes to have festivals, some special occasion, you know, something happening. It otherwise then, you know, life gets very routine. So these festivals then. So here's a festival in connection with the Lord. So this way then, we perform activities, but in connection with the Lord. Then it becomes very special. So the whole, yeah. So this idea is we want to do everything in connection with the Lord. So we want to, one, himself as a person, we want to deal everything with him, what he likes to eat, when his festivals are, what he likes to do at what time of the year, how he likes to dress, you know, what kinds of, you know, different services we can render to him that he would like. And besides that, it's then we like to create an atmosphere in which, you know, the maximum amount of people can take part. In a daily function, you know, less everybody has their particular service, but on this day then they can all come together from some very special festivals. Festival means utsav, means to lift above the difficult. Means sava means like the miseries of the material world. So utsava means to rise above that. One forgets all these things. One has a big festival, one forgets one's day-to-day problems and that, and becomes absorbed in the festival. So this observing the festivals, celebrating the Lord's activities, then that becomes a very wonderful way to forget. Otherwise, then it'll just be some utsava connected with one's own self or own family or own friends. Panchatattvaki, Shishigornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī Pāda ki, Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki, Jāya Nitya Gaura Prema Nandini.